the thing about having a mental illness too is like it forces you to get more coping mechanisms. And I think something really problematic is that faith is often treated as like the only coping mechanism in life for anything that is bad. And that's just like a really bad setup.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the podcast where being labeled a heretic is a good thing. We're starting conversations about God, politics, sexuality, spiritual formation, how we got here, and how to move forward post-evangelicalism. Nothing is off limits in our conversations with scholars, seekers, activists, and writers in our quest to uncover the heart of faith. Welcome to Holy Heretics.
Hi, everyone. It's Gary Allen, your host of Holy Heretics, and we are winding down the final episodes of Season 4, and I'm joined today by Anna Gazmerian, the author of the book Devout, A Memoir of Doubt. Anna holds an MFA in Creative Writing from the Bennington Writing Seminars. Her essays have been published in The Rumpus, Long Reads, The Sun, and The Guardian. Anna works for The Sun magazine and lives with her family in Durham, North Carolina. What I find hopeful about Anna and her work is the gift her story brings to so many of us who deal with mental illness. As we will discuss in this conversation, mental health and Christianity have not always been the greatest bedfellows. And more often than not, if you deal with depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, bipolar disorder, or honestly, any number of other mental health related things, the church will often side-eye you right out the back door. However, I think one of the best gifts that we can give the world and the church is our whole true selves. And to be honest about our lives and our struggles as we seek to recover from mental and behavioral health related issues. Life is hard. Being human is hard. And you are not alone. I'm not alone. What we are experiencing is very similar to what others are experiencing. And for those of us who have lived on the dark side of reality and are on the dark side of the human experience, we have gifts to give to the world that only we can give, because we know what it's like to lose touch with reality, to be in pain, to question the human experiment, to suffer with anxiety, to struggle to get out of bed in the morning, to struggle to be able to sleep, to struggle to be able to turn your mind off, to find meaning in an otherwise meaningless existence. If you've experienced any or all of those things, you have something to offer to people who are also experiencing them and to people who aren't. And so I'm honored to share this space today with Anna and to have this needed conversation about mental health and faith and how to move forward in a world where we don't see those two things as competing with one another. Well, Anna, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so I want to talk to you about your new book, Devout, A Memoir of Doubt. So maybe to set the stage for that conversation, can you share a bit about your spiritual and personal journey that led you to a point to where you wrote this memoir around your journey toward an in and out of doubt?
Yeah, so I grew up in a lot of evangelical spaces and got my community and purpose and meaning all from those spaces. I was someone that always had a lot of questions, and then at simultaneously felt like there was no space for me to ask them, or like there was something wrong for me for having those questions. And that was a huge part of my journey. Like there was always this deep inner conflict of striving and wanting to be perfect and wanting to follow all the rules, because that gave my life a framework. And I'm someone that has a ton of anxiety. So legalistic approaches to Christianity really worked for me, because it's like I got to take these checkbox, and if I did these things, then that meant that I was like a devout Christian or whatever. But for me, it was like this constant striving and this constant feeling like I wasn't doing enough. And my doubts just kept growing, and following the framework of what it means to be a Christian with praying and all these things, like none of that got alleviated. And so it was this constant feeling of like I wasn't enough for God. And I grew up with an understanding of mental illness as sinful and the result of like demons. At the same time, like I did have parents that did believe in mental illness, and like they put me in ADHD medicine when I was really younger, and they encouraged me to take anxiety medicine when I was in high school. But I feel like I put pastors and youth leaders and all of these Christian leader voices above my parents. And so even though they were trying to support and do all these things, like I was putting these other voices and elevating them above my parents. And then when I was 18, I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And for me, it was really stressful because I was having a lot of suicidal thoughts. And I mean, several teachers told me about how suicide is like the unforgivable sin. And so for me, it was this grappling of like, why would God allow me to do this? And then it got to the point of like, okay, well, this is Satan, and I've done something to get possessed by demons. And the hardest part for my diagnosis wasn't the actual diagnosis. It was losing this worldview that had served me for so long and no longer feeling like it could connect me to what was going on in my life. And then I had to take some time off of college, and I was like 18, 19. And I remember like getting home from a psychiatrist appointment. And at that point, there had been a lot of fallout with my church due to purity culture and my illness and just all these things. And I just remember like sitting to my bed and thinking like, I'm going to write a book about this one day. And I told myself that I would write a book by the time I'm 30. And I did that. I think I wrote it for my own healing and my own grappling. And I think prayer is really hard for me, but I view writing as a prayer and an invitation to speak to God and be unfiltered and honest. And I think through writing that, it helped me find God more as a place of safety rather than something to fear. And yeah, I think I wrote the book that I wish I would have had when I was younger. And that was another thing, was like when I was grappling with all these things, there was no resources for me to really turn to, because most of the memoirs that I read about church hurt ended in like denouncing faith altogether. And that was not something that I really wanted to do.
And you mentioned the bipolar disorder. For those of us who are a little bit uneducated around that, what does that look like, and how does that impact your day-to-day life, and maybe even more particular, diving in a little bit more into how that illness impacted your spiritual journey?
Yeah, so I think it manifests differently for everyone. And I think there's a lot of stigma around how it manifests. Like I remember when I was in college, a girl told me she was bipolar, and I was like scared of her because I just assumed she was going to have these rapid mood swings any second. And I was scared of like saying something that was going to set her off. And I think people do that. And I remember like after his diagnosis, like I was in a really good mood and laughing. And my friend was like, oh, does this mean you're manic? And I'm like, no, this is just who I am. And it was confusing to me because it was like, I got diagnosed and started like trying to put symptoms on my past. Like, well, was I manic there? Was I depressed there? Like, what is it? So for bipolar, it's cycling between mania, hypomania, and then depression. And I have type 2, so that's hypomania. For me, it usually looks like staying up all night, being really creative, and then it hits into a depression. I haven't had a manic episode in several years. It's depression, and bipolar depression is the hardest depression to treat because a lot of the medication can make you manic. It can make your depression worse. So a lot of like the conventional treatment, it doesn't work. And for me, with my faith, it was really complicated because I grew up in the framework of like John Piper, where, you know, you're not supposed to waste your life. And I think the hardest thing for me as like a young college student was like, there were days I couldn't get out of bed. There were days that I could not function. And I was so overwhelmed with the idea that I was disappointing God and that I was wasting time and that I was wasting time in which I was supposed to figure out more of what I wanted to do with my life. And that was difficult for me to grapple with. And then I think depression makes you have a lot of self-loathing, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. And for me in the past, it was like I viewed that as a spiritual thing, because I was like, well, you're supposed to hate yourself. You're supposed to not like yourself because you're a sinner. But right. It became a point of just like, I don't deserve people. I don't deserve anything. And so that made me just like isolate from community, which is really the most necessary thing that you need when you're mentally ill. I think I grew up very much in a Christian framework where they rush to Easter, they rush to the resurrection, they rush to the joyous occasion. And I think the reason I was able to hang on to Christianity is because I started to really like grapple with like the idea of Holy Sunday and this time where everything feels lost and like there's no hope. But in the end, they do find that. And looking at Jesus's life and looking at, there were points in his life where he didn't want to be alive. And there were points in his life where he was sweating blood. There were points in his life where he was telling everybody what he needed and no one listened to him. And he was completely alone. And I remember going to Jerusalem and like, I hated all of the things. Like I hated how touristy everything was. It was like gaudy and annoying. And then I went to Garden of Gethsemane and it was like, no one was there. Inside there's this chapel that is dedicated to the loneliness of Jesus. And like the whole painting is basically the sky. And then you just have him in the middle leaning on a rock. And so I think like I learned to see, the darkness that I felt as something to connect me to Christ. And something really powerful to me is like his entire ministry was about connecting to people outside of the religious circles. And the way in which he would define like a devout believer is very different than how Christian evangelicals would define it. And yeah, I think in my Bible now, I just have like sticky notes of all the people that are pretty much mentally ill. And I would say like, if prophets are a thing still, and I think they are, like, I think it would be those dwelling in like mental illness, like homelessness, incarceration, all these places that most of us overlook.
Yeah. Oh, I think you're right. I mean, when I look at some of the prophetic voices, not only in the canon of scripture, but also today, yeah, it's typically people who are on the outside looking in, or they've been labeled strange or weird or mentally ill. I rarely find, and then the other thing about that is they are speaking truth. They are the ones who have the megaphone going, hey guys, what you're doing is wrong. I was recently at a conference that will remain nameless to protect my job, but it was interesting because I had to be there for work and there was a group of protesters on the outside protesting this entire thing. And I found myself far more comfortable with the protesters and the prophets than I did with what I was participating in. And it does feel like that the quote weirdos, both then and now, typically are the ones who are bold enough and different enough and strange enough in a wonderful way to see things differently and to call into question what we call normal, which for the most part, normal is, it's harmful, it's oppressive, it's dehumanizing. Have you found yourself through this process of walking through mental illness, have you found yourself kind of being on the outside looking in and people looking at you like you're strange or weird, and yet you're going, hey, I'm finally seeing things truthfully. Have you experienced that kind of dichotomy of people thinking you're crazy and yet you're like, no, I'm finally alive?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's this complicated thing because when I was younger, I felt like church and Christian spaces were places that I felt this deep belonging. And even in my book, I felt that at points, but I don't really feel that anymore. Like, I think it's really complicated because I have people in my life now that are not Christians, and they're kind of like, Anna, why are you holding on to this? Like, what about this? Like, none of this brings you comfort. What, like, none of this makes your life easier. So like, why are you holding on? And I was writing in my journal one night, I was thinking about that. I was like, what do you do when you believe something so much that you don't really want to believe it, but you can't stop believing it? And that very much feels the way that I feel sometimes, because it's just like, what am I, this is so hard, because I'm in these spaces where I believe what they're saying, but it's also traumatizing because it's bringing up all these ways in which scripture and God were weaponized against me. And I mean, I have some friends that are Christians that are really kind and open to questions and opening to grappling with the things that I'm grappling with. But I think the hardest part for me is, like, with religious people, I'm kind of like, are they judging me? Do they think the things I'm struggling with are sinful or wrong? And I just don't have a lot of capacity for that. And it's difficult, but I feel like growing up evangelical, you kind of are in this framework of, well, I'm an outsider to the world. I'm different. And I'm not supposed to be of the world. And so I'm not going to say that being evangelical was positive, but I do appreciate that I had that mindset as a young person, because I'm at this point in my life, I kind of just have the confidence and I'm used to just doing my own thing. And if I don't fit in spaces, that's fine. I mean, that's what I was used to, and that's how I felt most of my life. I mean, I think I'm comfortable not fitting places.
That's awesome. Your book is titled Devout, A Memoir of Doubt. And the title reminds me of a quote from one of my favorite authors, Frederick Buechner. He said, "Doubt is the ants in the pants of faith. It keeps faith moving." How has doubt served you well on your spiritual quest?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think the essence of faith is believing in what is beyond proof, and believing in the unseen and things that often don't have evidence, and believing anyways. I think looking at the scripture, like, I think faith is about moving forward in spite of what you don't know. And I think having doubt has deepened the way I view God, but also, like, help me rid ideas of God that weren't serving me and who I don't believe God is. So, like, a very young age, I went on all these mission trips. I saw all this deep suffering, and it just didn't fit in my framework of who God was. And so I just feel like, I think faith involves this wrestling and questioning of everything around me. And I don't want to just take things at face value. And I don't want to just believe what people are telling me. I want to, like, think critically. And I think the problem with a lot of religious spaces is that you're just given these things as they're factual, or, like, this scriptural interpretation is the fact, and there's absolutely no other way of looking at it. When I think it's a lot more complicated than that. And I think because I now find God to be safe, there was a time where I had to repress all my doubt. But at this point, it's like, I feel safe to look around the world right now and just be like, God, like, if you have the power to stop all of this, why don't you? And, like, to have moments of thinking that God's cruel. And I think having that ability has enabled me to view God more as a safe place rather than something to be feared or some force that is judging me. I think that's affected the way that I view the world, but it's also affected the way that I experience emotions and not being afraid of how I feel. And I think, you know, as a parent, that's also really important to me, and thinking about how I want my daughter to feel with me and have me be a place where she can express her doubts and know that she's safe. And I think the doubt that I've had has made me, like, really passionate about creating safe places for people. And that's probably, like, the most important thing, is, like, fostering a sense of safety within my relationships.
I love that. Yeah. Like, safe enough to say, I don't know, safe enough to say, I don't think I believe that anymore. Safe enough to even open yourself outside of the Christian tradition. That's been part of my journey, is I'm beginning to realize that Christians don't have a monopoly on God, that mm-hmm. there are other faith expressions that can enlighten me, can awaken me to the divine presence inside me. And it's okay to invite them in and to figure out sort of a syncretic way of moving forward spiritually. I want to come back a little bit to the tension between Christianity and mental health, which have historically not been great bedfellows for those of us with mental health issues. What have you learned along the way as you navigate your mental health challenges and how it is potentially shaping or reshaping the way you view your faith?
I think I used to view faith as this like search for certainty and stability and positive emotions and feeling blessed and having everything in my life kind of feel stable. And I think the essence of mental illness is feeling unstable. And I think because of that, like the uncertainty of mental illness, the uncertainty of not knowing when symptoms are going to reappear, it's made me accept more the uncertainty of faith, and it's made me accept mm-hmm. more the uncertainty of life instead of trying to search for these unanswerable things and about the future, about God, all these things. I used to view faith and mental illness at odds and like they weren't compatible, but I feel like, I mean, I said this a little bit earlier, like if you look at scripture about so many instances of people that show symptoms of mental illness, and like even like Moses hearing things from a bush, it's like that could yeah. very much be like a hallucination. Like we don't know. And I said that in a Bible, I think it was like the last Bible study I went. I was like, I don't know. I think like Moses was hallucinating. I think there's so many instances of these people in the Bible that are just really grappling with their mental health. And that doesn't stop God from being present in their life. And I, as hard as it is, like, I think there are gifts that I've gotten from experiencing what I experience in the essence of like, I used to view the world as this like really good place with like the insert of sin and the pain and evil. But now it's like, I view the planet as like this really dark force, but there are these moments of light that are opposed to the darkness, that I'm more surprised mm-hmm. now by the beauty and the joy and all these things than I am by suffering. And mm-hmm. so much of suffering is life, and that is guaranteed. And no amount of faith is going to protect you from deep pain. And I think I used to view faith as this thing that was going to protect me from deep suffering or make meaning out of it. And I don't think there always is meaning. And I think the thing about having a mental illness too is like it forces you to get more coping mechanisms. And I think something really mm-hmm. problematic is that faith is often treated as like the only coping mechanism in life for anything that is bad. And that's just like a really bad setup for anything. I think having a mental illness makes me see the darkness in the world in a clear way, instead of just trying to avoid it and trying to stay in my bubble. And even when I am stable, I always say, like, I want to not forget what I have seen in dark places, because it's still part of what is like what is happening in the world. And I think I'm able to experience emotions and able to carry people's suffering. And there's something really beautiful about that. And there's something beautiful about depression to me. And my therapist is like, what the fuck, Anna? But I'm like, right. There's something about when I'm depressed, like because I've gotten to this place where I like can love myself and be gracious to myself, I can experience the love of people much more deeper. That when I'm depressed, like I can see those glimpses of light and I can see how profound that is. And I can see how God is in other people. And I think that was the thing before, like my diagnosis, I just saw God as this entity that I could only find in scripture. And I think I can't really engage in those things the way I used to. And it's forced me to look outwards. And I'm such more conscious of every single glimpse of light and glimpse of God.
Mm. I love that. I like what you said about times of struggle, being grateful for that, times of darkness. I'm old enough to be able now to kind of look back on some really dark seasons in my life. Around 2020, I was out of a job. I was struggling incredibly with depression, with suicidal ideation, and sought intensive therapy and help around that. And I think without that time of complete, just, you know, untangling, unraveling, truly my life falling apart mentally and behaviorally, spiritually, professionally. I mean, it just hit rock bottom on so many different levels. And I don't necessarily look back now and like, oh, yay, I'm glad that happened. I can look back now and appreciate the lessons I learned from it. And for the most part, it opened me up to a world of hurt. And it allowed my capacity for compassion to increase. And yeah, I do think that hurting people can see other people that are hurting. And yeah. I find it to be, I don't know, it's like a weird gift. It's like a black, dark gift that was given me, that was given you, that because of the suffering, because of the darkness, you can see things that other people can't see. And I think that's how so many of us who are privileged are blinded to pain mm-hmm. and are blinded to suffering because, frankly, we can just anesthetize ourselves. We can drink ourselves to death. We can drug ourselves to death. We can remove any kind of pain or struggle or darkness from our lives. And I think that eliminates the opportunity that darkness brings us to change, to be transformed, to look deeply. Yeah. Have you experienced that as well?
So like, it's been a really dark season for me. And I think the thing that's different this time is like, I always feared like going through periods of darkness where it was going to be worse than the time before. But I feel like it's the first time in my life where I'm not really scared of the pain, and I'm not really scared to look at it and to sit in it and to feel it. And like the last 2 days, I just like slept all day. And before I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm terrible. But I like needed that. I like needed to listen to my body. And like some of my book readings, I just like leave crying. And it's like, I need to feel it all, because I know if I don't, it's going to come back and be worse. And like allowing myself to sit in that, it's also just made me so much more aware of the people in my life and how they love me. And there's something that like, I call it like my sixth sense, where I can just tell when someone is in a depressive episode, like even people that I barely know. And
right.
I had a good friend and I could just tell, like she did nothing. I just texted her. I was like, you're in a depression right now, aren't you? She's like, how did you know that? I'm like, I don't know. It's like weird. But I'm grateful for that. And I'm also grateful that like, I'm not afraid of, I mean, like I said, I'm not afraid of pain, but I'm also not afraid of like other people's pain and sitting in pain that doesn't have answers. And I think that was the hardest thing for me within Christian spaces. It's like, they're really, and I mean, it's everywhere. It's like, they're good at sitting with pain when there's answers or they can fix it. But when there's pain that there's no answers and there's no clear way of being there for someone, and someone doesn't even know what they need, that's where people like turn a blind eye until the person can come up with like a checklist of what they can do to make the pain go away.
Yeah. But we're really happy about telling a story of pain after you found the hope on the back end, right? But like, oh, I was in so much pain, but look at me now. I'm healed. Yeah. They do not want to talk about pain when you're still in the midst of it, for sure.
Yeah. And I think the complicated thing with mental illness is that it's in these ebbs and flows where the pain comes. I mean, I used to think that having bipolar meant that like I would reach this stable place, and then everything would be together. And like, even documenting this journey in my book, it's like, I'm grieving that time because like when I was editing it, like so much of my life fell apart and I was so shocked because I was like, but I got it together. I was stable. And so like, I really wanted to reverse the recovery narrative. I was like, it's not guaranteed, but like, I think you never know when the symptoms are going to come back, but it's a matter of knowing that like you can handle it. And I don't know. I do feel really connected to people through pain and suffering. And like, I know there's the trauma bonding situation and I don't mean it like that. It's more of just the most special moments to me in so many occasions have just been the friends that would like sit with me in my car and like eat takeout food with me and just talk to me. And I think it's also just a change the way I approach people that are suffering where I'm like, I'm not walking on eggshells. Like my friend told me last night, he called me and like, I've known him since I was 8. He's like, when I was suicidal, like I told you and you didn't freak out. You were just like, okay, let's talk about it. And like, how did you arrive to this conclusion? Cause like there is this inner logic to suicide and all these things that people don't know what to do with. They just get scared. So yeah, I mean, I am grateful for all the lessons that I've learned because of that. And it's also like, I think it's really hard when you first get diagnosed because it's like your sole identity. And now I'm at the point where it's like, yeah, I mean, bipolar is there, but I don't really think about it. Like I see it as something that informs the other parts of my life, but it's like not who I am.
I love that. I love that. I like what you said about recovery not being, I think you said linear, or it's like it doesn't have an end journey, that it could be cyclical. There could be times of ebbing and flowing, and giving yourself permission, no matter what you are healing from or in recovery from, that there probably isn't an end point. There probably isn't a point where you're like, okay, yep, okay, now I'm done. It's like, no, this is just going to be a journey, and it's going to be a journey that might take the rest of your life, if not the next lifetime as well. And that is okay. You know, that's completely okay. I want to end with really a question about your book, Devout, A Memoir of Doubt. When you wrote this, as you look on it now, what do you hope that deeply personal book accomplishes in the lives of so many other people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's this really complicated thing because I wrote this book largely to heal myself and it didn't do that. I think I had to recontextualize it in my life as like an offering for other people. I remember telling my editor, like, he's like, how do you want readers to feel by the time they read it, like the end? And I was like, I want them to feel safe. And he's like, that's not an emotion, Anna. I'm like, whatever. But that's what I want people to feel, is like safety to explore the dark parts of themselves that they are often scared of, or finding a time and place to like really seek after community, and like not being afraid of taking a break from church, not being afraid of taking steps back in order so you can take steps forward. I didn't want the book to end with this like neat, tidy thing. I think something that I talk a lot about is like, what does it look like to embrace the messiness of life? What does it look like to embrace the things that don't go as planned, which is most things? So yeah, I think I just wanted it to be a safe space and not to overlook or repress pain, which I think a lot of Christians tend to do in order, in their opinion, to be more spiritual.
I love that. Well, Anna, thank you so much. Where can our listeners find you and learn more about you and your journey, as well as grab your book?
Yeah. So my Instagram is agasmarian, and then my Twitter handle is Anna/Gasmarian. And then for my book, you can order it from any of your local bookstores, Amazon, if you don't hate them, anywhere online. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing your heart, your journey, and for your courage and telling your story. I think it's, I find story to be some of the most transformative things that we can hear from other people as we realize, you know what, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. I am going through the ups and downs and good and bad of being human. And my humanness is a part of who I am, and everyone else is experiencing that as well. So thank you for sharing that, and I wish you best of luck.
Thank you for joining us. This episode was produced by the Sophia Society and written by Gary Allen Taylor. Music is by Faith and Foxholes. If you need more resources to guide your spiritual journey, head to sophiasociety.org for articles, resources, and our free ebook on faith deconstruction. And before we go, will you consider joining us on Patreon? Your partnership allows us to continue creating this sacred space for seekers like you. By becoming a patron, you gain early access to each podcast episode, as well as premium content, and an exclusive invitation to join our monthly online community. Simply sign up at patreon.com/holyheretics. See you next time.